Okay, Professor Tufano here, and we're going to talk about Chapter 4 in the BB&BB Handbook of Public Speaking. And this is Chapter 4 begins on page 41. I'm in the 6th edition. So I'm also using a new microphone, and hopefully it's better than my old microphone. It seems like it is. So hopefully this microphone will add another layer of understanding. Oh, yeah, like a dream. But okay, so here we are, and we're in, this is August 29th, 2021, and this is Chapter 4. I'm not sure if this will be two parts or one. I'm going to try to keep it between 20 and 25 minutes. We'll see if I can do that. So depending upon my additional commentary, we'll see what we can do here. But okay, so speaking freely and ethically. Speaking freely and ethically. So on page 41, it says they list three learning objectives. Explain how free speech has begun and challenged and defended throughout history. 4.2, it says here, list and explain five criteria for ethical public speaking. And then lastly, explain the relationship between ethics and credibility. Okay, and then also on page 42, it says the outline, three parts, speaking freely, first speech in the Constitution, free speech in the 20th century, free speech in the 21st century. Speaking ethically, have a clear, responsible goal, use sound evidence and reasoning, be sensitive and tolerant of different views and opinions, be honest, don't plagiarize, and then it says speaking credibly. Okay, so those that's a little bit of the introduction outline for the chapter. Now, so we're talking about free speech. It wasn't that long ago that talking about free speech was really an extremely non-controversial idea. And so that has certainly changed over my career of 25 years of teaching. And it is, in some cases, somewhat controversial, and in other contexts, extremely controversial. But the idea of speaking freely and free speech, there's a context for it. So the United States Constitution, the First Amendment to the United States Constitution, to paraphrase, the government cannot penalize you, us, for speaking our mind, speaking our opinions. It just can't do it. There are opinions, and the government cannot penalize us for it. Now, that is a general statement, and the United States Supreme Court, historically over the last 200 years, has upheld that time and time again. However, in regards to private entities, there's technically no right to free speech, technically. Now, I say more broadly, there is a principle of free speech, but in regards to the social media entities that many of you or most of you are connected to, somewhere in the terms of service, the TOS, it says in there, if we don't like anything that you post, whether it is a visual image or something that you type into the machine and send to us, if we don't like it, we can censor it. We could stop it. We can just keep it from being heard or seen. That's what they've decided. So that's not part of, there's really not a lot of time spent in this chapter 4 of the book on that issue. Now here's the main problem. This book was published, I think in 2018, and a lot of the information that is contained within the text, it could be as old as maybe even 10 years old. And so most of you are probably young. And if you ask your parents, or maybe specifically grandparents, based upon your age, they can give you a little history of the internet and a little history of, you know, technology, communication technology, and then, of course, the advent of these different types of social media companies. And I think it's interesting that each one of you could spend some time looking at the history of it, because oftentimes when you're young, you sometimes are tricked or fooled into thinking that when you were born, all these new things just kind of popped out of nowhere. But of course, there is a process where we start at something and then things, you know, change and evolve, and we have what we have today. So I won't take you back through my history. Of course, I was born and grew up and went to school when there were no computers and no internet. And I think it was a fine time. And of course, you all live in a much different time, grew up in a different time. And that's true of every generation. But what's different of this generation as compared to maybe 100 years ago, if you think about what's the difference between your great-great-grandfather's life and your great-grandfather's life and your grandfather's life and your parents' life, some of those things really weren't that different. But in the era that you've grown up in the last, let's say, 20 years, been some huge leaps and bounds in technology. And so, of course, there's some major things and developments and things that were positive and also things that are not so positive happened just really in your lifetime, maybe since you had been born. So they'd have popped up really recently. So this is all kind of still kind of new, especially as compared to talking to dinosaurs. So here you are in this technological age, and we're talking about speech and the context of free speech. So let me again try to summarize. The United States Constitution, the First Amendment, the very First Amendment, the United States Constitution, to summarize, says the government cannot penalize you for your opinions. They just can't. Now, I do know that's a general statement, and again, as a general statement, it's accurate, it's true, it's reliable. Now, there are some exceptions to it. We know that. If you go to the airport and you yell at the top of your lungs, "I have a bomb," and the police come and tackle you, the dog bites you, they tase you, they shoot you, they pepper spray you, they tie you up, drag you across the airport, and throw you into the cell, and then they interrogate you, and then you say, "I was just kidding. I don't have a bomb. I was just kind of joking, JK." That still could be a crime. I'm not saying it is, it may be, and even if it is, technically they may not prosecute you, because even though something's a crime, as you all have seen, if you watch the news, there's all sorts of things that people do that are obvious criminal activities that either they get arrested for and they're never prosecuted for, or they're not even arrested for. So, I mean, that's just a reality of our current criminal justice system, right? So, in regards to this idea of free speech, in regards to the government cannot penalize you for speaking freely. They just can't. It's clearly a violation of your First Amendment right. And again, these are general statements. They're true, they're reliable, and of course, there's exceptions. However, most of the communication that you are probably involved in, and maybe even most of your peers, and maybe most adults, it is normally done on the social media channels. And almost every single one, the popular ones being, say, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, I think those are the most popular ones, they all censor speech that they don't like. If they don't like it, they censor it. And they shouldn't, but it's what they do. And so, because they're private companies, the public, especially the public that is demographically young, they, at least when I've seen surveys, they're kind of okay with it. So when young people are asked, "Is it okay for social media companies to censor ideas that they don't like?" Most young people say, "Yeah, they should be able to do that." And of course, when you talk about the older demographics, maybe 40 and above, they would probably say the opposite. They shouldn't. So this is a generational idea, but we'll spend more time on that. Now, if we were meeting in class in person, we'd probably spend a lot more time on it, but we're doing audio lectures and those kind of things. So it's more difficult to have kind of extended conversations about these ideas. However, I'll just spend a bit of time on it. So if the government was to restrict your ability to speak freely, that would clearly be violating your rights, and you could, redress those grievances through different ways. You can sue them, you can, those different ways that you can get them to stop doing it, and/or say they won't do it again, and maybe even, pay you money as some type of penalty, some type of discouraging conduct through the courts. You may be able to do that, right? But when it comes to these private entities, it's very difficult, because even there's some lower level courts. I mean, ultimately, one day the Supreme Court will address it. They really haven't addressed it, because if you take a look at the social media companies going back to the mid 80s, they were originally given a protection from being sued. So they were given immunity. from being sued by people who they use their platforms, and they said things that were, you know, libelous or just things that were bad. I don't know. Typically, when the social media companies first started, they all were platforms, which meant that person A and person B can use that platform to communicate. In a sense, they could share their opinions. And if you didn't like their opinions, you would just say to that person, "I don't like your opinions," or you could block them from being, you know, seeing your opinions or you seeing their opinions. And it was kind of simple. And these entities said, "Well, if we don't get immunity from lawsuits, we know there's no way for us to be in business without being sued. And if we get sued, there's no way to stay in business." And so the government agreed with Facebook and Twitter and a lot of these people that started, you know, 20 some years ago, that they would allow them to be exempt from being sued if they were a platform and if they didn't censor people's thoughts. And the only time they can censor, at least this is what in the beginning was part of the quote deal, was they can only censor things that were considered violations of law. So typically if someone said, person A said, "I'm going to come over and kill person B," well, yeah, the social media companies could just delete those posts or block that person or even kick them off of their platform. But today it's morphed, it's evolved to the point where even if they don't like something that you say, it has nothing to do with violating any law. It's a simple violation of their personal preferences or their personal feelings about any topic. They can kick you off, they could suspend you, they could delete you, they can edit you, they could shadow ban you, all sorts of things. So if you want more information on it, feel free to look at the internet. But from my perspective, I'm kind of a free speech absolutist. I've been teaching this for quite a long time. And I trust the people that communicate with one another, that they don't need somebody to censor their opinions. They just don't. Now, again, that opinion that I just shared may be an outlier as compared to maybe other people that you interact with that say just the opposite, which is fine. But I do trust the people that I communicate with, that they don't need someone to tell them what they should or shouldn't say, as long as they're not violating the law. And in fact, I don't know this because usually the social media companies don't tell you this, but I suspect that most of the information that they censor is not violations of law. It's just violations of their personal preferences about things they like or dislike. So if whatever the idea is that they don't like or don't appreciate the perspective, they will just censor it. Now, again, if you go back 10 years ago, that rarely happened. It was clearly things that were violations of law, not violations of someone's, you know, preferred perspective on a topic. Okay, so I'm not trying to drive this point into the ground, but it's a much different place. So back to this idea of speaking freely. If you go on any social media platforms and you speak freely and they censor you, which they will, there's not much recourse other than just trying to find other outlets for your opinions. And again, as long as your opinions are not violations of law, you could find other venues and other outlets. There are some social media companies that take pride in saying we won't censor, so you probably can find those. But if you like censorship, then you could certainly seek out, social media organizations, companies that really appreciate censoring. And from my perspective, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, they're very busy centering posts and things that people type into their machines. And again, some people think that's good. Some people don't have an opinion, and other people like me, again, probably dinosaurs, think it's a very bad idea, because ultimately, even really rotten ideas, there's still a purpose and still a reason that people feel compelled to share those ideas. And there is one theory that says people that are censored are not going to stop sharing those ideas. They're just going to go underground. And then once the ideas go underground, they ultimately have the potential to create a greater danger than if they are shouted from the rooftop and everybody can hear them. And again, you can study that. Again, this stuff has been studied for years and years and years. It has nothing to do with social media, but censorship has always happened, especially in authoritarian countries where there's dictators or oligarchies or you know, just political hierarchies where the government decides, you know, for the people what they can and cannot say, and has nothing to do with social media. Okay, I don't know if I belabor that. If I did, I did. But so that's not part of the chapter, but it needs to kind of be added. Okay, so on page 43, it says here, explain how free speech is challenged and has been challenged and defended throughout history. And they use a couple of examples, and I don't even know if these are really good examples, because you can use, there's hundreds and perhaps thousands of examples of where speech has been either interrupted by people or has been encouraged by people. And again, oftentimes, depending upon your feelings or perspective about free speech, typically the founders applied this idea of free speech because they wanted to make sure that even the most grotesque and rude and obnoxious speech is still protected, and that the government should not decide which opinions were good and which opinions were bad. Because once the government gets to decide that legally, then of course, then only the government accepted opinions are the ones that will be communicated. And oftentimes those have led historically to bad outcomes, because in a free society, freedom is also people expect to be free, not only to physically move around, but also to speak. And there's a lot of very positive things that come out of it, even though there are some negative things as well. Okay, so the First Amendment in 1791, the First Amendment to the United States Constitution was written to guarantee that Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. So in this case, Congress is the federal government. So Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. In more than 200 years since then, entities as varied as state legislatures, colleges, universities, the American Civil Liberties Union, and federal courts have sought to define both law and public policy, the phrase freedom of speech. And typically, the courts are often challenged by these other types of entities that oftentimes try to narrow the boundaries of free speech and or censor. So the courts are often dealing with conflicts, and the conflict is typically an individual wants to say something or has said something, and somebody who was either in charge or had some power over that person was able to censor or keep them or penalize them for what they say. Free speech during the 20th century. During World War I, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that it was lawful to restrict speech that presented clear and present danger. The decision led to the founding of the ACLU. In 1940, Congress declared it illegal to urge the overthrow of the federal government. However, even as they heard that type of speech employed by other people, some of the courts and lawmakers argue that only by protecting free speech could the United States protect the rights of minorities and people who are disfranchised. For most of the half of the last 20th century, the Supreme Court continued to protect rather than limit free speech, upholding the core aspect of democracy. That's true. And even today, the courts, generally speaking, will uphold the individual's right to speak freely, even when other people are upset, dismayed, and believe vehemently, passionately, that that person is not only a bad person, but shouldn't be saying the things that they're saying. So certainly there's still a bit of controversy regarding speaking freely. At the bottom of the page on 44, it says, free speech gained protection in the last two decades of the 20th century when the Supreme Court found virtually all attempts to restrain speech in advance are unconstitutional, regardless of how they're defined as hateful or disgusting. So in other words, if you hear something or you read something and you think it's hateful or disgusting, the Supreme Court said that doesn't even matter. And then the court case that you and I will discuss at greater length and will be the subject of your first quiz is going to be Texas versus Johnson. And here at the bottom of page 44, they allude to it. It says here in 1989, the Supreme Court defended the burning of the U.S. flag as a speech act protected by the First Amendment. Now, that is the Texas versus Johnson case. So in 1984, Johnson was arrested for burning the American flag in public in Dallas, Texas. and Texas passed a law prior to that, but prior, much prior to the to 1984, talking about that you cannot desecrate a venerable object in public, and they defined the United States flag as a venerable object. Therefore, that was a violation of law, and Johnson was arrested. So that's kind of the background of this. Here at the bottom, they don't specifically spell it out, but that's the reference. Then it says in 1997, the court struck down the highly controversial Federal Communications Decency Act of 1996, which President Clinton at the time signed into law, and said that imposed penalties for creating, transmitting, or receiving obscene material on the internet. So some of you like that because we now have Pornhub.com and some of these other types of pornography websites and stuff where it is legal to not only produce and you know, send out these images, you could also freely partake in it. And that really, you have to thank the Supreme Court in 1996 for that decision. It says, the court ruled that the interest in encouraging freedom of expression in a democratic society outweighs any theoretical but unproven benefit of censorship. So it's really interesting that in 1996, a Democrat president with a Democrat Congress, well, I think it was, it may have been a Republican Congress, but with Democrats and Republicans voting and the president signing into law this Communications Decency Act, basically saying the issue was about pornography and even simulated pornographic activities on the internet. And they said that even though they passed this law, the Supreme Court said you can't do that. People need to be free to be able to express themselves. And if it's defined as pornography, so what? It's defined as pornography and it's okay. So it's really interesting how it says here, the court ruled that the interest in encouraging freedom of expression in a democratic society outweighs any theoretical but unproven benefit of censorship. Okay, so this was 1997, right? Now fast forward to 2020 or 2021, and there's certainly lower courts that are siding with Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and some of these other places, YouTube especially, when they decide to censor things that they don't like. And again, these aren't issues that are, quote, violation of the law. These are just things that these social media companies don't like. And often these are social, political issues, right? They have to do with which president you like, which one you don't. You know, currently it's about masking, it's about vaccines, it's about different presidency, about different presidents, those kind of things. So it's really interesting how the Supreme Court said that pornography is okay, and the reason it's okay is because the interest in encouraging a freedom of expression, pornography, in a democratic society, right, outweighs any theoretical unproven benefit of censorship. And now today, censorship is all the rage. Censorship is approved. Everybody loves censorship, or at least not everybody, but you know, it's definitely censoring people's idea is not controversial now. In fact, a lot of people encourage people's ideas to be censored. Again, this is from 1997, so how long ago is that? From 1997. So you're talking 24 years. We've seen an interesting change in our culture and society where now maybe the plurality of people that are you know, asked say, yeah, censor. You know, they should be able to censor things they don't like. So that's kind of interesting. They use an example on page top of 45 about Oprah Winfrey and how she supposedly hurt the meat industry by saying something about a thing called mad cow disease, and then people stopped eating meat for a short time, and then the organization sued, and the Supreme Court said no. That's also free speech, right? Okay, so I'm gonna stop there because I'm right at about the 25-minute mark, so we'll make this two parts, okay? So look forward to the next part of this, and so this will be part one of two on Chapter 4, Professor Tufano, and I'm out.